The readings this morning are going to be arranged differently. There's four of them. They come from four traditions that have scripture, which is simply a word that means written down things. Doesn't have any particularly holy meaning. But these are four religious traditions, and ours is among them. The first one comes from the Jewish tradition. It's the oldest of the readings. It dates from around 515 before the beginning of our era. It's in the book of Yeshayahu in the Hebrew scriptures, or Isaiah, as we say in English. This is the third part of that book, written by a totally different author than the first two. And hear these words.
We are sent to comfort all who grieve, to give them bouquets of roses instead of a handful of ashes. We are sent to uplift them instead of offering messages of doom, praising their hearts instead of shoring up their depressed spirit. Rename them sturdy oaks of justice. Remind them they show forth the divine glory. Then they will rebuild everything fallen into ruin and raise a new city out of the wreckage. Immigrants will join you in husbandry and agriculture, and all of you will be ministers of God.
The second oldest, from the year 95 of our era, from the Gospel of Luke, written by an unknown author whom we call Luke. This is material based on earlier material by a totally other unknown author. This is from the Christian tradition, obviously. This is Jesus speaking. You don't have to be a genius to understand these things. Just use your common sense. The kind you would use if, while being hauled off to court, you decide to settle up with your accuser along the way, knowing that if the case went to the judge, you'd probably go to jail and pay every last penny of the fine. This is the kind of decision I am asking you to make. The third reading, which comes from 1810, is from Mahdi ibn Abi Dar al-Naraki, who is a commentator on Quranic ethics, a Shia Islamic traditional scripture.
The Prophet said, "One moment of justice is better than 70 years of worship in which you keep fasts and pass the nights in offering prayers and worship to God."
And lastly, Judith Sargent Murray, a universalist woman, a great feminist long before that word existed. This is a quotation from Our Women Workers, written in 1882 by a universalist biographer named E.R. Hansen, a woman celebrating the greatness of her own universalist tradition. We don't know exactly when Judith Sargent Murray said these words, but I spent the week authenticating that she did indeed say these things. She was married, by the way, to John Murray, who was the founder of Universalism here in on our continent, amongst the English colonies. And Universalism dates from before the Declaration of Independence. Were I to personify justice, instead of presenting her blind, I would denominate her the goddess of fire. Her broad and never-closing eyes should stand conspicuous She should possess the power to unravel the knotty entanglements of the most sophisticated web. She should disclose at a single glance the secret windings of the most profound labyrinth, patient and unerring. Justice should feel, hear, see. But truth alone should be the pole star by which she should shape her movements, and equity only should constrain her determinations. A few years ago, after reflecting on the experiences of my life for decades, I finally came to accept this, that most children are wiser than many, if not all, adults. What I mean is this. When I was a child, and somebody in the car in front of our family car, as we were going down the highway, threw trash out their windows so that it splattered down the freeway next to us, I knew that was not a good act. I knew that before Earth Day was invented. I knew that in my bones before I ever heard the great word ecology. I trusted my previous experiences of wincing when I saw tossed away trash tangled in the tree roots or choking the rose bushes near the schoolyard where I played. As I grew older, I lost that wisdom. I grew not to trust my own experience, but to trust the adults around me who were telling me, oh, it's ugly, yes, when people toss trash, but you don't need to worry about the trees and the roses. Nature can take care of herself. And so I began to lose the wisdom I really had as a child. And when I took the streetcar to downtown Detroit and saw the homeless men talking to themselves or wildly waving their hands in the air to beings invisible to me as they sat near their tarry sleeping bags, I knew accurately in my heart that they were abandoned, that they were pushed away to the edge by the society in which they supposedly lived. I trusted the experience of my eyes, which told me they were suffering. I could see it on their faces. I trusted that it made no sense that anyone chose to be out of their mind like that or to live on icy streets. I could feel in my bones instinctually that they needed help, that they needed to be in safe places. But when I grew older, my attentive experience of the world was reshaped by what all the adults around me told me. Oh, no one can do anything about those people. They're not going to live very long anyway. It's sad, but you have to be realistic, you know. Besides, it costs a lot of money to take care of people like that, and we have more important things to spend our tax money on than that. So I once again lost the wisdom of my childhood heart and gave in to walking the path that was going to take me to adulthood. An adult who could live with inequities visible all around and not flinch quite so hard in sympathy and not really allow my desire that something should be done to dominate me. Unfair access to everything due to the color of a person's skin? Well, that's too big to solve. It's been this way for a long time. You can't change people's prejudices by passing laws. They were just raised in ignorant families. That's all. Nothing can be done. Now, you just don't go causing any trouble. Don't make demands of people to change. It only irritates them when you bring it up. Again, my trust in my own childhood experience, my own wisdom, crumples, replaced by the blindfold restraints of adult fear. What fear? Fear of upsetting the apple carts, of course. Fear of asking for something to be done to restore the world to a place where everyone, no matter their color or their origin or their culture, can be counted on as an important voice in the chorus of love and life to which everyone belongs. So the nun who taught me in eighth grade points out some facts and figures one day. So I hear most people in prisons are persons from some minority group. Children in Bangladesh are dying of starvation. Our city of Detroit is full of abandoned and burned out ruins that used to be houses that people actually lived in. What a handful of ashes instead of a bouquet of roses I was given. Then the adult response to those questions when I share my horror? Oh, nothing can be done about those things. Life is not fair. Just get used to it. The problems are too big for you to get upset about. You're just a kid. And besides, pay attention, you live in a good neighborhood, in the greatest country on earth. You are lucky to live here. Be glad for your luck. You're too sensitive, you know. Toughen up. So my native trust and my own experience of sympathy and childhood wisdom withers one more time. And I am able to accept that I'm lucky enough to have what I need, and I don't have to do anything for those who don't have everything they need. Adulthood seals the deal by regarding everything about childhood as something to be transcended, not the least of which is the attentiveness and sensitivity to others, which I am calling wisdom. And so I yielded, and I became an adult. cut off and insensitive to the world that I used to see quite clearly, and I think correctly. Growing accustomed to the hard realities by blindfolding myself to their pain. I just walked past the homeless. I turned the page when the editorials decry the inhumaneness of our prison system. I ignored the blowing trash along the freeways and said, that's just the way it is. And I gave up thinking that folks could be people just like me, even if they were judged to be in the category of those nasty lawbreakers. I protected myself with 1,000 oh so reasonable excuses. These handily allowed me to live unbent by the reality that many people have to die young. Many people have to be locked away because of who they are as much as because of what they do. And that everything falls into ruin eventually and is buried in a heap of trash. So just get used to it. The earth is ours to use and cannot be hurt by us anyway. It's so much bigger than we are. And so forth, and so forth. My child's heart experienced the unfairness and felt the impact of all of it keenly in my bones. My childhood urge to want to respond with attention and understanding to the state of unfairness around me just got shelved as immature. My adult sensibleness finally won out. No wonder, I thought sometime later, no wonder that the great Jewish teacher Jesus of Galilee is recorded as saying, you know, unless you become like children. But how grateful I am this morning to be able to announce that throughout history, some people have decided to forego standard patterns of adulthood and have sought to recapture the sensitive wisdom of their childhood experiences of sympathy, care, and heart, their real feelings. I love it, for example, that Rosa Parks, when she sat on that bus, did not make adult excuses for the folks who were pushing her around. Oh, they don't mean it. No, she felt the pain in her heart, like any child feels pain when pushed around. And she sat down, admitting to one and all that she was sick and tired of all the baloney that was hemming her in. Inspired by her action, and brick by moral brick, others joined her in beginning to restore her home city to regain some sense of human dignity and wholeness. The anonymous editor of the last third of the Hebrew book of Isaiah writes, then they will rebuild everything fallen into ruin. Big task, no doubt, everything fallen into ruin. Of course, he was not talking about moral bricks, but actual stone blocks and masonry. Such restoration undoubtedly takes longer than a bus ride and an arrest, and it's very physically tough. Makes no difference, of course, whether we are talking about rebuilding a war-devastated Jerusalem, rebuilding the ruins of Detroit, or removing or restoring dangerous or abandoned ruined houses here in Columbus. Yes, restoring cities is tough work, a big task. Why would anyone do such work that's so difficult? The text responds with this. We are sent to comfort all who grieve for what they've lost, their city. We are called to give them bouquets of roses instead of a handful of ashes. We are sent to uplift them instead of offering messages of doom, praising their hearts instead of shoring up their depressed spirit. In other words, we are not called to say to those who live in the ruins, it can't be done, give up, but rather, you can do it. We will help you. Ours is to offer such praise. Ours is to offer such encouragement. And who is the we who is to do all of this encouraging and praise so that the rebuilding of cities can be accomplished? For me, Unitarian Universalists, Jews, Muslims, Christians of all stripes, Protestant, Evangelical, Catholic, Pentecostal, and Anabaptist, all working together to do the work of justice and praise, thousands of adults trying to reclaim the sensitivity and feelings they really experienced as children before it was drummed out of them, and then to work together with all those in the ruins to get something done in response to those feelings. Of course, as many of you know, I am talking about BREAD, the acronym for our interfaith justice organization here in Columbus. We were one of the founding members, 54 congregations participating in this organization. This morning we read from the scriptures of each of these traditions, including our own. After all, scripture means anything written, not necessarily a holy book. And though I didn't actually read it, I also told our children this morning the biblical story of Nehemiah, the Nehemiah who gives his name to our annual large action meeting. This year it will be on May 7th, a Monday evening, at the Celeste Center at the fairgrounds. I guess the fairgrounds are that way. Nehemiah is the one who not only physically rebuilt the walls and buildings of the city that he loved, that was in ruins, but who had to deal with the local leaders who felt that he was upsetting the apple cart of their privilege by doing so. Nehemiah also found out that he had to deal with social issues of income disparity, starvation, and political manipulation brought about by people of privilege. And he had to do all of this. All of a sudden, this eunuch who had once lived a far more privileged life himself in the courts of Persia. But open-eyed, when he returned home, he recognized that he wasn't the only one in town who was outraged by both the social issues and the heartbreak of a city left in ruins. So he linked up with all of those others and organized a meeting to demand justice from the privileged and local power brokers. Nehemiah brought thousands together to confront the folks profiting off the misery of others and restored not only the brick and mortar post-war Jerusalem, but the spiritual self-worth and dignity of all the people who lived in its ruins. I find that BREAD has been echoing much of the Nehemiah story recently. For instance, BREAD, after researching the practices of other large cities our size, and there's quite a few in the United States, realized the virtue of the land bank practice found in all those other cities, due in large part to BREAD research in our Nehemiah action meetings. The Franklin County Commissioners have approved a $3.5 million annual funding for a county land bank that will address concretely vacant and abandoned housing in our area, for the first time. The BREAD Jobs Committee has made another comparison with cities our size in the area of employment. Columbus comes in dead last among the 16 cities they compared with each other for its attention to small businesses and their capacity to create jobs. In other similar-sized cities, small businesses account for 66% of all new job creation. But in Columbus, small businesses account for only 50%. Why? Because the city itself focuses on larger businesses and corporations, which perhaps surprisingly to some, bring in disproportionately fewer jobs into communities like ours. A number of us will be talking to Mayor Coleman about these issues on Tuesday afternoon. We went earlier last week, but he didn't want to see us. The Christian writing from the Gospel of Luke prefigures another issue raised and supported by Bread in concert with the NAACP. This is the idea of restorative justice lifted up in a co-sponsored conference on the last day of last month. Bread brought to this conference many community leaders associated with the juvenile justice system here in our area, including members of the Ohio Supreme Court and Justice Elizabeth Gill. Crime, said one speaker at the conference, is more than lawbreaking. Crime harms victims, it harms communities, it harms the offenders, and it damages relationships. If crime is harm, he said, then justice should be healing. This healing approach involves everyone who has been hurt and is primarily aimed at doing justice by repairing the harm that has been caused by the crime. And it requires conversation between all the parties and mediation between them, not jail. This echoes the story of Jesus you heard earlier, warning the marginalized people of his own day that the court system is not about healing, but strict fines, whether they're just or not. He tells them that it would benefit any of them to try and enter into a healing conversation with their opponent before they end up ground to dust in the legal system of that day. For the courts then had judges who could be easily bribed by the well-to-do. He recommended relationship, not revenge, coming to terms instead of coming to blows at the courthouse. In this 1900-year-old story, we find the roots of the present day and entirely evidence-based restorative justice practices which Bread and the NAACP are lifting up. Yes, evidence-based over time. And Columbus is just now approaching this practice, which has been so successful in other cities, a practice based on community-centered reparation instead of revenge, a practice that has succeeded far greater in restoring lives than our present practice of immediate imprisonment. And frankly, Universalist Judith Sargent Murray's vision of Lady Justice that is not blind has no blindfold, but rather is a seeing justice, is a bold scripture from our own Universalist tradition, one which supports and shares Bread's understanding of justice. Let me read the text again. Were I to personify justice, instead of presenting her as blind, I would denominate her the goddess of fire. Something alive, in other words, look, alive, moving. Her broad, never-closing eyes should stand conspicuous. That means you should be able to see that she's seeing. She should possess the power to unravel knotty entanglements. Yes, it is complicated. That's right. The adults were right when they said it was hard. It was an entanglement, but they were wrong to say that nothing could be done. She should disclose at a single glance the secret windings of the most profound labyrinth. Yes, it is a maze. You're right. It doesn't mean we don't walk it. Justice should feel and hear and see, and truth alone should be the pole star by which she should shape her movements, and equity. That means equal access, only should constrain her determinations. I agree with Judith Sargent Murray. I think that our interfaith work, illuminated by a whole variety of scriptures, but rooted in our own sensual experiences, is not best served by the image of a blindfold across the eyes of justice. Justice needs to see. It needs to perceive in the manner I did as a child. It needs to see the real inequities of the world face to face and not turn away. My childhood heart saw and heard and felt the ache of those pushed to the margins, those given a death sentence by the unwillingness of my later adult eyes to notice them, the unwillingness of my adult soul to identify and feel their plight, of all struck down by fortune or systems of oppression. I know that the blindfold statue of Lady Justice is supposed to imply impartiality. I understand why the blindfold was put across her eyes. But I think that taking the blindfold off requires of us a lot more honest self-questioning, a more demanding spiritual work inside of our own hearts. I want us not just to see the misery of abandoned human beings on the street. I want us to see our own socialized partiality and find ways to root it out the hard way. Justice work, you see, grows from the depth of our own heart, not in the clockwork image of good and bad, the righteous and the unjust. Equity and truth should help shape our vision, Judith Murray insists, and I certainly agree. That's exactly why research and evidence-based approaches are the discipline of BREAD. The urgency of BREAD, however, rises from hearts that have restored some of their childhood vulnerability before the troubled world. Open eyes that see the ruins of a once great city and are hurt because of that. Open eyes that pay attention to visible inequities in work, in access, in restoration. Open eyes that are like a child's open eyes. Unless you become like children. The Muslim passage concludes my sermon this morning. I join with the organizers of BREAD who would like each congregation of the 54 of us who are part of BREAD, with their divergent scriptures and divergent theologies and divergent worship styles, to consider the words of the prophet as offered by Al-Naraki. One moment of justice is better than 70 years of worship and fasting all night and adoring God. What would happen if we could get today's attendance at worship at this service and the next one combined out to this action meeting for justice in the Columbus area? What would happen if thousands of citizens from 54 congregations ignored their differences for a while and banded together to rebuild and restore our city, county, and outlying areas to greater justice? What would happen if we could trust the experiences we once had as children and have had to recover in our latter days by deliberate and intentional attentiveness? What would happen if we saw Earth Day holistically? Greater justice for and attention to all beings and all things on this earth.